The following seminar was recorded at the Worship God West 2014 conference and features Doug Gould. It's entitled Microphone Applications.
Somebody, we're in the last class. Just see how many new people we have here. And who's new? All right, some additions. Hi. My name is Doug Gould, and this is my information. If you need to get a hold of me, doug@worshipmd.com. My phone number is there. I have a Facebook page. That's my personal Facebook page. You can go there, but you'll see pictures of my grandkids and stuff. Probably not as interesting. But I have a Worship MD page, too. It's facebook.com/officialworshipmd. You can post questions there as well. My website is basically just a calendar and some videos that are on it that I've done. There's one good video that recently did for PreSonus called How to Mix Your Church, you might find interesting. And it just went over 101,000 views. I don't know. Somebody must have watched it like 80,000 times. I don't know. So. So we're going to talk about microphones now. And I'm going to, this is like an 8-hour class, and we're going to do it in 45 minutes. I'm going to skip the math and the science, as the description said. I'm math challenged. So, I don't want to talk about physics and that stuff. I want to talk about stuff that you guys can actually apply this weekend. This is stuff you can try out this Sunday, okay? I really believe that the more you know about microphones, about half of your audio problems will disappear if you know what the right mic is for that application, how a mic works, how to aim it, polar patterns, some of the laws of physics that we will cover will... Simple rules like inverse square law. I'll give you a couple of rules like 3-to-1 rule. And we'll talk a couple of applications on how to mic things. I'm trying to get Bob next year to let me do some mic labs, like how to mic drums, or how to mic guitar cabinets, or how to mic a choir. And I think that would be more practical. But you still need a fundamental understanding of how they work before you just start putting them up there willy-nilly. Which is what most volunteers do. They just put a mic up and they try to fix it here. And that's the wrong approach. Move the mic until it sounds right or try a different mic. My favorite worship leader right there, Bing Crosby. Okay, so what is a microphone? It's a transducer. What's a transducer? Anybody know? There you go. It's right there. The answer's right in front of you. Good. Got some observant people here. So in the case of a microphone, it's taking the acoustic vibrations from my voice, my source, and converting it to electricity. And this mic is a moving coil mic, so it's using a process called magnetic induction to do that. A speaker is a transducer. And it does just the opposite. It takes the electrical and it turns it back into acoustic energy. Amplified, louder. But they're both the same thing, just reversed, right? So can I use a microphone as a loudspeaker? Every time you drive through Jack in the Box, you are. That's why the thing sounds so bad, using a microphone for a speaker. Can I use a loudspeaker as a microphone? How about that? It's my favorite kick drum mic. Pretty, isn't it? That elegant vice clamp. But that'll give you all the low-end thump that you ever want to hear. It will not give you this, though, the snap. So you're going to have to put a microphone in the drum to get the beater. But this will give you all the low frequency, all that stuff. You've probably seen, one point or another, a little drum in front of a kick drum says Yamaha on it. It's called a sub kick. It's the same principle. They take a woofer, they put it in a drum shell with a mic jack, and that gives you all that nice low-end thump. Yeah, right. So I can't afford a sub kick, so I made my own with the... We're going to talk about three types of mics. We're going to talk moving coil, also known as a dynamic mic. Anybody ever heard of an SM58 before? Dynamic. microphone. Talk about condensers. If you're ever in the UK and ask for a condenser mic, they won't know what you want. You have to ask for a capacitor mic. Don't ask for a snake either. Ask for multi-core. You need a 48-channel multi-core and 3 capacitors. Wow. And ribbons. We'll talk a little bit about ribbons. So here's a diagram of a moving coil. Actually looks like a miniature loudspeaker. So the diaphragm right here, usually made out of Mylar plastic, some synthetic. Radio Shack, I think they're still made out of newspaper. But you have a magnet. You have a magnet here with a voice coil. So you have an element, a diaphragm, and a voice coil. The vibrations hit this thing, and this moves back and forth like a piston, creating current. It's a crude device. It's simple. It's almost non-destructive. Anybody remembers Roger Daltrey with The Who? He would spin it around his head, slam it to the stage, and still sing into it. That's why you don't have to be afraid of giving these to your youth band. They can't hurt them. Humidity really doesn't affect them. Temperature. You know, playing in bands in the Northeast, we leave them in the truck overnight, bring them into the bar, set them up, and they'd be fine. Condensers, not so much. Ribbons, not so much. But these, affordable, yes. But don't spend less than, you know, $75-$80. That's going to get you a good dynamic microphone. If you see the deal, like in the catalog, get 6 dynamic mics for $100 and we'll give you 2 more for free. Don't do that. Spend the money, spend what you can afford to invest in the mics. The weakest link in your system is going to affect the whole system. So if you buy cheap mics, it doesn't matter how good your speakers or your mixer are. And they'll last. So these things will do just about anything you want them to do on a live sound stage with one caveat. You got to use them close. If you're using SM57s for overhead, stop. If you're using them for your choir mics, don't do that. There's not enough sensitivity there before they start to feedback. Because that voice assembly is so heavy, I got to have some sound pressure level present to move it. And if you're 3-4 feet away from it, not going to be very, very good. You'll still get something, but it won't be accurate. So use them close. Don't use them for choir. Don't use them for overheads. Make sure that your talent is singing into them closely. You know, here.
Not here.
Not here. Here. And we'll talk about the inverse square law in a minute, which will emphasize why you have to do that. If you see a really tiny microphone, like a little Countryman Headhorn or something, you know that that can't be a dynamic. They can't make it that small. Those are going to be a different type of mic, like a condenser. Any questions? They'll take high SPL, sound pressure level. I had a kid told me, yeah, I blew up a SM58 with my voice. Okay, yeah, really? We've held up SM58s to jet engines from 2 feet away, not blown them up, so I really doubt that's true. Robert Plant couldn't even do that. So anybody knows who he is? Anybody? Paul does. Paul knows. Okay, this is a picture of a condenser microphone. And condensers come in all kinds of shapes and sizes, but it's a completely different animal than a dynamic mic or a magnetic induction, a moving coil. Anybody with electronics background knows what a capacitor is here, something that stores a charge, okay? The way that these things work, and different manufacturers do different things, obviously, but most of the time, like in an electret, we're going to put a permanent charge on this back plate. And in the diaphragm, sometimes it's got metal sputtered on it, sometimes gold, so it's conductive too. And what happens between the vibrations hitting this and this charge on the back, since they're both conductive, is some capacitance happens in the middle, which changes the polarity. These things are really, really sensitive. AT's condenser mics, for instance, this diaphragm is 1 micron thick, 1/10,000th of an inch. Really sensitive. So when you're doing distant miking, that's probably what you want to do. You want to use something that has a sensitivity, so even from a little bit further distance than a dynamic would be able to work, this will work. They also give you much wider frequency response. They'll cover the entire range of human hearing, no problem. They also are much better with transient response, which I'll cover in a second. They need what's called phantom power to operate. This transient response here is just a picture of a sound going into a condenser and a dynamic simultaneously. And even if you don't know how to look at the scope very well, you can see that this is responding much faster than this one. And another thing occurs, too. When the sound stops, this kind of smooths right out. This one's still kind of oscillating because of the weight of the assembly. Okay? So inertia keeps it moving. You think that's really important in live sound? Maybe. Maybe you got a perfect room, but most of the time you're not going to really pick up all those differences as much as you would if you were in a recording studio. You got walls reflecting. You've got an audience. Bands playing all simultaneously. It's not a perfect situation. In a recording studio, when you're trying to pick up all the subtleties and nuances of the music, that might be more critical. Phantom power we talked about in the last class, but if you weren't here, on your mixer there's a little button that says 48V, and that supplies power down the mic cable to power up a condenser mic or an active direct box. Don't turn that on unless the channel's muted or the fader's pulled down, because you'll get a loud pop to your speaker. Looks like that. 48V, okay? That is not phantom power right there, okay? If you see something like that, don't touch it. So as I said, they come in all types and sizes. This is a large diaphragm condenser. It's a side address, which means I'm going to speak into the side of it, not in the top of it. If you have one of those microphones, you don't sing into it here. You sing into it here. In fact, some people even get confused with the side address. I've seen even pros. This is top address. This is side. I've been in situations where I see some large diaphragm mics and it's overheads on drums and they're not getting anything. I said, you probably should flip those things around the other side because you got the back of the mic facing the drum set. So AT does a cool thing. They print front right on the microphone. Headwarns. Headwarns I prefer for spoken word. Singing, not so much. When I led worship in my church, I had a headworn microphone for a while, and you could never get away from it. If you coughed or sneezed, you know, microphone like this on a stand, you go, choo. But this one followed you. Choo. The other thing was that the sound guy at that time said, I'm hearing like a weird hum, like, and it changes pitch. Well, I have a weird habit. When I'm not singing, I kind of hum and not necessarily in tune with the song. I'll go, They're looking all over the system for what that could be. They finally figured out it was me humming. The guy came and grabbed it off my head. He says, you're not using that anymore. The reason I like them for spoken word for pastors versus lavalier is because when it's here, it's always following the pastor's voice. If it's a lavalier over here and he turns away from it, you don't have them. Same. And it's farther away. These lapel mics, lavalier mics, are great for video because they stay out of the shot. But you're not dealing with loudspeakers or feedback. I have to crank the gain up on that thing so much to try to get level the same as I would have here. So, by the way, does anybody know who invented the lavalier microphone? No? Satan invented it. It's the express purpose of distorting the word of God. Clip-on mics, really nice. Variety of applications. You know, some drum mics that use clip-on clamps or whatever, they look like shark jaws. And some drummers get really offended when you put these big metal things on their beautiful finished drums. They also choke the resonance of some drums. So if you're looking for clip-on mics, I love them because you don't need mic stands, and they keep the drum set cleaner. But get the ones with the little rubber clips instead of the big, giant metal jaws on them. You'll please more drummers, and they're easier to use. These are also cool, too, because sometimes we'll use overheads on drums. And depending what you're doing with the overheads, sometimes you get the whole drum sound through those. And some people just use them for the cymbal sound because they're so far away from the drums and you want cymbals, you're still going to get drums in there. So clip-ons can be clipped underneath a cymbal with the backside of the mic facing the drums, and now you're just getting the cymbal sound. That's a technique used a lot lately. Stereo mics, basically two mics in one housing. Do recordings with these. We can use them for overheads on a drum set, two mics in one position. Use them for ambient in-ear mics for musicians for their in-ear monitors so they get a nice perspective of the audience in the room. They don't feel so closed off. Shotgun mics, we use these for news gathering. There's a myth about shotguns that if I aimed it at this gentleman in the red hat here, that he would sound like he's right here next to me. That's not true. He's still going to sound like he's that far away, but I won't hear you on the side so much. They're very focused, but it doesn't close the gap or the distance. Ribbons are my favorite mics. They've been around for a long time. They have a tradition of being known as very fragile, but very warm. Broadcasters use them forever in radios, stations, and recording guys have used them for a lot of different aspects. That picture I showed you of Bing Crosby, he was singing into an old RCA ribbon. That thing probably worth about $15,000 if you found one. It probably wouldn't work. Probably blew up. When I was working in recording studios, if somebody requested ribbons, we'd always ask them what they're using them for. We're not going to put that on a guitar cabinet. And you better not be a screamer because, you know, you blow on the thing the wrong way, you could hurt it. That's not true of the new ribbons. The new ribbons are using new materials, new synthetics. They're more robust. They're not fragile as they used to be. I can throw them in a knapsack at the end of a gig. But if you ever get a chance to hear a ribbon microphone, if you're anything like me, your jaws will drop, especially just like on a guitar cabinet. You have a condenser on the guitar cabinet. You have a dynamic like an SM57, and then you have a ribbon. You play the condenser, and you go, yeah, it sounds nice. It's bright. Got all the frequencies. You play the dynamic, it's got that signature rock sound to it. That's cool. Then you turn the ribbon on, and the guy's just doing like an open chord D on a Marshall. Boom. And you hear harmonics you never heard before. And your jaw goes, what is that? I want four of them. Well, let's try this. Let's do the condenser and the dynamic and see if that sounds better than ribbon. Nope. What other mics you got? Whatever I put up against ribbons, typically, especially the new AT ribbons that I've been listening to, that's my favorite microphone. I just can't afford a lot of them. And every time I loan them to studios, they never send them back. Drag. So when I'm off the road, I have about four or six ribbons in my arsenal at any time that when I'm not traveling, if anybody wants to borrow them for a week or two, just let me know. But please send them back. Please. Guys, you guys are really sleepy, aren't you? Is it too hot in this room or something? Open the windows. The way these work, these are also a dynamic microphone, in a sense. They're not a moving coil, obviously, because in this particular case, the voice coil and the element are the same thing. It hangs in a U-shaped magnet, typically. They're, by nature, bidirectional, so they pick up from the front and the back, which makes them a little more difficult to use in a live situation, unless you baffle the back of it. But incredible sounding. I want you to think about, before you place a microphone, what is in the room or in the studio that you're in. When you place that microphone on a source, what are the other things that could get into the path of that microphone that you have to be aware of? So you have to learn to discern the desired sound from the undesired. And if you don't take the time to figure out what the undesirable sounds are, you'll never get a good result. So you want to try to isolate that. And the way to best do that is to know how polar patterns or pickup patterns of microphones work. And once you understand that concept, it'll give you a clue as to how to aim it the right way. You with me so far? So we're going to talk about three basic categories of polar patterns or pickup patterns, which is how a microphone hears things. from what direction is it sensitive, and what from what direction is it not so sensitive? The first one would be omni. This is a polar plot. The polar plot, basically a plot of a microphone's pickup characteristics. Notice that this one has some concentric rings in it, and it's got some degree angles on it. And you're seeing two dimensions of what happens in three dimensions, basically. What you'll find missing from this, which directional mics have, is a shaded area. We'll look at that in a minute. Because it has no shaded area, it means this microphone hears everything from every direction equally well. From the top, from the bottom, from the sides, no matter where the sound's coming from, it has no discernment. It's a microphone with no gift of discernment. Okay? So where would we use a mic like that? In a live sound situation? I aim it at the guitar cabinet, but I'm going to hear the Hammond, I'm going to hear the audience, I'm going to hear the drums. No. Use them primarily for recording. Pastor's mics, I'll use Omni because unlike a directional microphone, Omnis don't have proximity effect. What's proximity effect? Those who were in the last class heard a bit about it. But a directional mic will get more bass response as I get closer to the microphone. Omnis don't do that. They'll stay the same frequency response whether you're far or close. So for spoken word, it's great. They'll also reject things like wind noise or when a paper's being turned on a podium. But typically in the recording studio, we use Omnis a lot. Anybody have praise singers with their own microphones? What a pain in the neck that is sometimes. They're wireless, they're all dancing around in front of monitors. Eight of them singing. I'd make that a small choir. Gang eight of them together, put a mic on them. Done. Eight mics, trying to blend that many is difficult. But in a studio, I would take the same eight singers in a nice room, wood and glass, and I'd put them in a circle around an omnidirectional microphone. And I'd get this beautiful blend of vocals on one mic. Can't do that live, though. You'd be picking up every other sound in the church. All right? Everybody with me so far? Yeah. You'll see that now in this picture when I describe it this way. Let's talk about the angles first. We see 0, we see 180, we see 90, see 270. I don't like the 270 over here on a microphone. I like it when it's 90 on each side, and I'll show you why. Let's say this is a top address microphone. This is known as a cardioid mic. Why? Does that look anything like a heart shape to you? Cardio, kind of, more like a kidney bean, but they thought cardio sounded better. Anyway, 0 degrees, another name for that is on axis. I'm on axis when I'm at 0. 0 on this microphone would be right there. Three-dimensionally now, think about 90 degrees, where the ring is. Where's 180, where the cable is. So when I deviate from 0, when I go off axis, something happens to the signal. These are increments of sound pressure level decreases. So 5 dB, 10, 15, 20, 25 dB down. So as I rotate off axis to 45 degrees, look how much less signal I have here than here. This is the loudest, boomiest, brightest part of the mic. As I rotate off axis, I'm going to lose some signal. When I get down here, I get less. Where it bends in like this, the heart shape, it's called a null, N-U-L-L. To nullify, to cancel, to make void. You hear this term of mic rejection. Mics don't reject anything. They just don't hear very well in certain places. But a mic doesn't reject. It doesn't have a brain. It doesn't know how to reject the sound. If you put it in its path, it's going to pick it up. So this is the easiest microphone in the world to aim. You want to aim your desired sound somewhere close to 0, and your undesired sounds, you want to face the null. Desired, undesired. Worship leader, floor monitor, snare drum, hi-hat, choir, speaker cluster. Right? Easy. Now that you know a polar plot, what it looks like, cardioid, on axis, null. Oh, I know how to aim it. Something else happens when you rotate off axis, though. You lose high frequencies. You don't need to EQ the highs out of it, necessarily. You can rotate it off axis. On a guitar cabinet, it's too bright. Rotate it off axis. So it's too basic. Pull it back. Not enough bass. Put it toward it. Not bright enough. Aim it right at it. So move the mic a little bit before you just start messing with the mixer. Something else here, too. It looks like it rejects sound here, and it does, but not all frequencies are rejected. Anybody know anything about wavelength and sub-bass frequencies? They know that all of those are omnidirectional. You put a subwoofer in a room, it fills the room up. You put a tweeter in there, and it's very directional. So if I aim this at the back, a monitor with a lot of bass frequency in it, you're going to get a lot of bass frequencies coming into the back of the microphone. So especially for vocal monitors on the floor, try to eliminate some of the low frequencies from coming out of that thing, hitting the back of this. It'll really help. Here's another directional mic. This is called a hypercardioid. How many nulls does this have? Two. Off this angle and off this angle. You see the rock star with the two monitors? Main reason he's got that is to look cool. But another reason he's probably using this kind of a mic. Maybe not. I've seen some situations where he had two mics like that and he's using a cardioid. What's the difference with this? Look how soon this one starts to lose signal. It's a much more focused pickup like this. Cardioid is wider, about 130 degrees of pickup, top, bottom, sides. So with a cardioid like this, I got a lot of signal, even if I'm pretty far off axis on the thing, I still got good signal. So if Stevie Wonder is coming to your church, you want to give him one of these. Right? Now, if he's playing piano, though, you might want to do a hypercardioid. Why? And then tell him, Stevie, stay on the mic. Don't move your head so much. Because where do my monitors go if I'm playing a keyboard? So if I'm using a cardioid mic, I could still do that, but I can tell you something. With a monitor there, I'm not going to get this thing quite as loud before it starts to squeal as I would with a monitor that's in a null. So here's a monitor position for that, those two types of mics. You see? If you've got three singers sharing monitors, consider what kind of mics you're going to give them. I don't think more than two people should be sharing a monitor anyway, but that's not realistic. I've seen churches where three or four people are sharing a monitor. That just doesn't work. The dispersion of the monitor can only cover so much. So if she's out here and she's out here, you can turn that monitor up to your blue in the face. She's never going to hear it because she's not in the dispersion characteristics of that speaker. But if you had a monitor in front here, and the singer who's in front of it has a microphone, and this singer has a microphone, make this one a hypercardioid or a supercardioid, this one a supercardioid, because that monitor is in this angle, this one's back of it, and this one's on the side too. You might not know what kind of mics you're putting up. You don't know what the pattern is. Sometimes a mic manufacturer will put a little diagram on the side, like a little upside-down heart. It's cardioid. You see a little upside-down heart with a lobe on the back of it, like this, that's going to be a supercardioid or a hypercardioid. What's the difference between super and hyper? Schurz makes supers. AT makes hypers. You know what an SM58 is? All the SMs are cardioid. All the betas are supercardioid. The difference is supers give you a little bit more range here, and the nulls come down a little bit, and the lobe isn't so big in the back. Here's another application. I wanted a little bit less tom-tom and hi-hat in my snare mic, so I put the hi-hat and the toms and the nulls of the microphone. I'm still going to get some in there. I'm not going to reject it all. But it isolates my snare a little bit better. That's a beta 57, for all those who don't know. That's a super cardioid. So mics will do all the patterns, switch by playing with phase and double elements and things like that. We can make or find microphone be an omni, a bidirectional, figure eight, cardioid. So if you have the money for a good mic for your home studio, your recording, or even for your church, a good multi-pattern large diaphragm condenser is a nice thing to have in your package because it does a variety of things. This is a bidirectional mic, like a ribbon. But you also find large diaphragm condensers that can do front and back recording simultaneously. The nulls are directly off axis 90 degrees. So I can put a singer here and a singer here. They can do a duet with one mic. Put a guitar player here, and I hear the reflections of the back glass and brick wall coming in the back here. Again, we're going to stress frequency response, knowing frequencies and how to identify them, know what ranges occur in the range of human hearing certain instruments will occupy, certain vocal ranges will occupy. That will help you choose mics more appropriately. Frequency response, as related to microphones in their names, comes down to instrument mics and shape mics. An instrument mic is a mic that's neutral. Whatever comes in is going to try to come in unaffected. It's not going to boost any range of frequency or cut any. Like a canvas for an artist. He doesn't want to paint on a canvas that's already got color on it. He wants to start fresh. So microphones like this allow you to tailor the sound however you need to. If you know something about frequency and you want to put that on a vocal, you'll know to boost anywhere between 2 and 6K, roll off 100, drop off anything above 10K, and you got a good vocal mic. But if you just put that on any vocalist or on a flute or anything else that just occupies this much space and there's a kick drum over there, that mic will pick up the kick drum too. Right? Proximity effect, we talked about that. This just shows a graph of how much that does increase. Let me cut off my high pass filter so you see it better. So from 2 feet away, it doesn't work from 2 feet away, but I get no bass response there. And as I get closer, 2 inches, I'm going to get more bass. 1 inch, I get more bass. And right on my lips, I get a lot of bass. So you can see the bump and the boost and the bass response as I get closer. So you want to use high-pass filters if you've got singers that are singing this close to the microphone. They've already rolled it off, but proximity effect says as I get that much closer, I'm going to get this much more rumble. So on your high-pass filter on your mixer, you can either apply it if it's just a switch or roll it up until that bass is gone because you still want the gain. You just don't want all the bass frequencies. So now I can be this close and thin that rumble right out. Now it's more articulate. That's a picture of a shape mic, like a 58 or like the one I'm holding. This, I can just look at it and know that it's a vocal mic. They're going to roll off everything below 100 because of proximity effect and because there's really not that much in the human voice that's in that range, except artificially. This is going to be smoother, and then between 2 and 6, 2 and 8K, there's going to be a mountain there. God designed your ears in such a way that we're very, very sensitive in that range of frequencies. That's where all the difference between vowels and consonants are. If you lose hearing in that range, it's very hard to have a conversation. So for vocals, right out of the box, we're boosting that range to bring the vocal out more. Are you with me? Okay. Okay. Inverse square law. I hate physics, but you have to know about this one, okay? Because without knowing how this works, you're not going to be able to figure some things out. First off, the inverse square law is a law of nature, law of physics. Who discovered this? Newton discovered it, but who invented it? God, yeah. So it's one of God's laws. Just want you to all know that. And the way it works with microphones, we use it in astronomy. We use it in lighting. astronomers use it to determine distance to stars based on the brightness of the star. Lighting guys use it, so if they want this much coverage of an area within a certain intensity, they might have to bring the light closer. If they double the distance away, they get more area but less intensity. With audio, if I get closer to a microphone, I'm going to increase its level. If I get farther away from the microphone, the level is going to decrease by the rate that I can calculate. So let's say I get X dB SPL at this distance, whatever that is, inch. If I double the distance away, I'm going to lose 6 dB. Check, 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 check. Hear a difference? Check, check. Maybe not a lot, but there's a difference. If I double the distance again and go 4 more inches, I'm going to lose 6 dB again. Check, check. If I had a 200-watt amp and I wanted to increase its output by 6 dB, how much power would I need? 4 times. I would need 800 watts to gain 6 dB. So think of that in reverse. 800 watts, 200 watts. Or this, 3,200 watts, 800 watts, 200 watts. So do you want to have the pastor pay for more amps and speakers because you got singers who are singing down here? Or do you just want to train your singers to sing here, where you get more gain, and then stay there? That's why I like head-worn mics better than lapels. Here's a lapel. How much do I have to crank that to get this? So when you're doing this, as opposed to this, you are breaking God's and you are in sin. And there are eternal consequences for that. That's all I'm going to say. Come to the altar. Same thing with monitors. I got Jimmy, who's constantly 12 feet, the guitar player in my band. Constantly 12 feet away from his monitor going, "Hey, Dougie, can you turn me up, man? Can't hear my monitor." Sure, Jim, why don't you take like 6 steps towards your monitor? How's that? Man, that's a lot better, man. Thanks. And do anything. Right? What you got to remember, though, is that God also puts your ears on your head, not on your kneecaps. Right? So if I get this guy coming closer, it's at his ears right now, right? What if he's standing here? It's going to hit his knees. What do you do? If I can get him closer to his monitor, what can I do with the amplifier? I can turn it down, right? But I want to aim at his ears, so. Anybody using Media Shout or Easy Worship or Pro Presenter? Okay. So you're not using your hymnals anymore, right? Make great shims. Should like that. Shim them up. Daryl knows that one. Okay. The lighting game or lightning game. Anybody play the lightning game? Play with my kid when he's afraid of lightning, you know. Hey, Joe, don't worry about it, man. It's like a mile away. How'd you know? Next time you see the lightning, count. 1,000, 2,000. How fast does sound travel again? Roughly 1,000 feet a second, right? So a foot per millisecond. 1,000 feet a second. Lightning. 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. Joe, it's about a mile away. Don't worry about it. When the lightning and thunder happen at the same time, that's when he's running into the bed. But same thing with sound. Because sound travels so slowly, we have to figure out delay times for speakers. We have to figure out where speakers are going to be set if they're aimed at one source. There's a guy named Glyn Johns who came up with a mic technique that recorded thousands of records with it. typically like a jazz record would be a kick drum mic and an overhead, and then two overheads for stereo, snare and a kick, maybe four mics. He took the two overheads and he did something radically different with them. He took one and put it right over the snare drum. Then he took the other one and he put it over by the tom-tom. And it was aimed at the snare drum this way, parallel to the top of the floor tom-tom. Then he took a tape measure. And whatever the distance was from the snare to that one, he made the same to this one. So when somebody hit the snare drum, the sound would arrive here and arrive here simultaneously in phase. When these are not in the same vertical plane or the same horizontal plane, those sounds are going to arrive at different times. Now they're not in phase. That's why we use XY sometimes, or a stereo mic, because those two mics are at the same point in space. The sound arrives at that point in space simultaneously. So a tape measure is always a cool thing to have with a drum set. Not to say that other sounds aren't going to get into those mics from other places, especially if you're using shields. Anybody using shields in here? Throw them away. Okay? Melt them. Make coasters out of them. They don't work, for one thing. Think really a quarter-inch piece of plexiglass is going to stop the acoustic energy of an instrument that was designed for war. If I could hear Scottish Highlanders coming from 5 miles away with drums and pipes, shield ain't going to stop that. And if you think it makes things softer, think again. Turn the PA off, let the drummer play. Do you still hear the drums? Of course you do. Well, what do they sound like? So think about the reflective surfaces that we talked about before, discerning desired from undesired sounds. You got a snare drum mic like this, and then 3 or 4 feet away from it, maybe not even that far, is this reflective thing coming back into all the mics. Very difficult to mic drums with shields all around them. They don't work. There's other solutions. You could spend $2,000 on a shield or $2,000 on drum lessons. Teach the kid how to play. He's always playing at one dynamic range. A shield is not going to help. Skill is going to help. Listening is going to help. Playing more often is going to help. Playing in different environments is going to help. You can't play in this room the same you would play in the sanctuary. Different levels. I'm in a church that's probably no bigger than this room, a little portable church. We can't have a drum set. So we're using appropriate instruments, djembe, cajon, shakers, kungas. We have a Roland kit. Sometimes we'll bring that out. Electronic drum kits do help if you can find drummers who want to play them. Nobody wants to play little rubber pads with tubes on it. But there are some new kits out there that are really nice. Pearl makes the E-Live kit. Basically a real drum set, 10, 12, 14, 16 toms with electronic heads. The drummer gets good enough someday, you take the electronic heads off, you put acoustic heads on there, and you got an acoustic drum set. So that's half the battle, having them playing something that looks real. It's gotten that way with digital pianos, too. I mean, I was in Houston, Second Baptist Church. They had a $250,000 Bösendorfer 13-foot grand on the stage. Sounded amazing. The lid was closed. I said, man, I got to find out what they're using for mics on that thing. Probably Earthworks or something. DPAs, Sheps, whatever. I opened the lid. There's nothing in it. They had a Yamaha digital piano slabbed in there. I'm not kidding. You know, me as a piano player, I get questions all the time. How do you mic a grand piano? It depends on the application. If it's a concert recital, one piano, lift the lid up and put mics on it. If you got drums and guitar amps around it, you can't have the lid open. You're going to have to find a different way to mic it. Is a piano in tune? Are you using one mic on the thing? In some ways, I'd rather play a digital piano than a piano that's badly mic'd, right? Same thing with drums. If you've got samples of a Bösendorfer grand playing through your PA, instead of a Bösendorfer that's badly mic'd, I'll take the samples any day of the week. Same thing with electronic drums. But Shields, getting back on that wagon, doesn't help. And the comb filtering is just crazy. You're getting things all out of phase with the reflections. What I've been experimenting with, does anybody know what a boundary mic is? Boundary mics look like little stealth fighters. They're flat. They have a little angle up and they come down. You put them like on hard surfaces, like in the Broadway musical Stomp. They'll put them all over the floor so you can people can hear the dancing picked up by the mic. And the way they work is the reflected and the direct sound enter the element of the mic simultaneously, so it's in phase. So I've been experimenting by putting boundary mics on the Shields instead of using overheads. So now the direct and reflected sound go on the mic simultaneously. So it doesn't work all the time, but if the people are so intent on using Shields, which I still don't understand, then sometimes that's a solution. I saw one church had an electronic drum set with Shields around it. I'm not kidding. Because the pastor's wife was convinced that the drums were softer with the Shields, even though it was all electronic. Can't argue. Pastor's wife. I'm always picking on her, Paul. I'm sorry. So here's what comb filtering looks like. Choir, especially, make this mistake all the time. If you don't remember anything else from this class, remember this. Less mics always sounds better than more mics. Don't tell Audio Technica I said that. They want you to buy a lot of mics. I don't want you to use them all. Give them to missions or put them in a closet, spares, okay? So see, 12, 15-voice choirs, there'll be like 8 mics on them. You kidding me? 12, 15 people, I could do that with one mic if they're ganged together. Get them together. Don't let them all spread out. Then I need more mics that way. Gang them up. Make them look like a choir. Turn them in like this if you have to, instead of shoulder to shoulder this way. Start with one mic. If you have to add another one, add another one. But don't put up 4 initially. Because this is what happens. This person in the choir is this close to this mic, and this one's a little farther away. So her voice is going to enter 2 mics at different times. When it gets into the mixer, they sum, and all these frequencies are getting notched out. That's called comb filtering. This is what the frequency response looks like. You've all heard it, too. Pastor's got a lapel or a headworn on, and he goes back in front of the podium, and there's a podium mic. And as soon as he steps here and these 2 mics are on, something happened to the sound. Became more distant, more vague, whatever the description you want to use. But it's not articulate like it was. So what do you do in that case? Shut one off. Just pick one. Or have some fun. Go ping pong. So that's the wrong way to mic a choir right there. You know, first off, it's too far away. Even if they're condensers, that's too far away. Your mic shouldn't be more than 3 feet away from a choir. I go in sanctuaries and I see these little condensers hanging on a wire, and it's like 15, 20 feet above the choir. Are you kidding me? That can't work unless it's just for recording. It doesn't work with a rock band on the stage below it. So that's wrong, and these are too close together. You'll get way too much comb filtering this way. So this is more proper. Closer, farther apart. And this is also by a distance we calculate. This is called the 3-to-1 rule. So however close a microphone is to a source, if I'm spacing them out horizontally like this, I want to make sure that this one is 3 times the distance of this. So if this is a little closer, 2 feet, this should be 6 feet. If you want to try to push this to 4 feet, which I don't suggest, this should be 12 feet. Now, why does that work? I gave you the answer like 15 slides ago. Inverse square law, right? So 3 feet, 6 feet would be down 6 dB. I'm not quite doubling again, but I'm probably down 9, 10 dB over here from this voice. So when you're doing it the other way, you're breaking God's law. You're sinning. You're not singing. You're sinning. Got to clean up the church. This is XY, also known as coincident pair. You might hear all the term near coincident, too. It's when you have two microphones that are exactly the same, and their heads are almost touching like this. You can use large diaphragms. Small diaphragms are usually easier. They make adapters where you can actually put two mics on an XY adapter on one stand. And the whole idea of this is you can see the cardioid patterns of the two. Cardioid here and cardioid here. So anything in the center coming in here is going to be covered well. Anything from the sides is going to be covered well for stereo or for mono. But all of that sound arrives at this one point in space. Simultaneously, it's all in phase. Use it for overheads on drums. I use it inside of pianos. I might take two side address small diaphragm condensers and put them 6 to 12 inches by the hammers facing the keyboard player. Then I'll take a big, large diaphragm side address and put it over one of the holes. So this is the meat of the sound, and this provides me the attack. Get too much attack, bring it back. Want more attack, put it forward. Close the lid. Or you can use boundary mics, just like I was talking about with the shield, because that picks up reflection and direct simultaneously. You can put those right on the lid, two of them, not one. You can also, I don't have anything to draw with, but you can imagine the shape of a grand piano like this. You could put one in the inside wall back here, and one where it starts to curve on the inside wall here, boundary mics. They have little wires that stick out the piano. So if I pick this one up, I'd put one back there and one right in here. Close it. The one mic under the soundboard doesn't work. There's no attack. There's no resin. And because pianos have such wide frequency range, you need two mics at least. Anybody double miking their kick drum? In the last class, we talked about a sub kick on the outside and then putting like a condenser or something inside to get the attack. Think about phase again. So I got one mic. It's maybe 12 to 18 inches away from this one. So what can I do to make those sound better? I can delay one so the sound arrives at the same time. I know a lot of people get the double mic thing happening. Sounds great for the PA, but then they're recording it at the same time. They play the playback of the kick drum, and it's missing something because it's out of phase. So AT came up with this really cool microphone. Anybody ever heard of a band called Metallica? Their sound guy is Big Mick Hughes. He came up with a design for AT to try. He said, I'm always dealing with the phase of a double mic on a kick. So let's put a condenser and a dynamic in the same time plane. Put it inside the drum, and now the beater and the thump, tack, thump, are coming into one point in space simultaneously. The thing breaks out into two cables. It's marked condenser and dynamic. Sounds great. He designed it for kick drum, but he ended up using them more on guitar cabinets than he does on kick drums now. He's got a condenser and a dynamic on one point on the grill simultaneously. These are boundary mics. So you can see if you have a regular mic on a hard surface, direct sound enters here, then the reflected sound comes in some milliseconds later. That's called acoustic comb filtering. Electronic is when it's from multiple microphones. Acoustic, it's when it's from a reflection and a direct sound on one microphone. So boundary mics conquer that by having the reflection and direct enter the microphone at the same time. You have feedback. These are the only things you can do to eliminate feedback. Nothing else. There's no other solutions. Move the microphone closer to the talker, because if I get this farther away, what do I have to do with the amp? I got to turn it up. Lapel, head worn. Singers who sing down here instead of here. I'm going to get it up so far it's going to start to ring. I don't have enough juice. Move loudspeakers closer to the listener. That's the whole thing about the monitor being so far away. If I get them closer, aim the mic the right way, I can eliminate some feedback. Monitors and mics are probably the biggest cause of feedback. So ringing them out will help too. Reduce the number of open microphones. Do you guys know what mutes are? We talked about this in the mixer class. I'm going to reiterate it here. Use your mutes even during the music portion of the service. Don't wait till that part is over and then mute them for the pastor. Anytime that you're going to able to cut down on the amount of open mics in your system, the cleaner the system will be and the less feedback you'll have. Every time you double the amount of open microphones, your system is going to drop 3 dB. So from 1 to 2, both open, but one's not really being used, system gain is dropped by 3 dB. Feedback potential has gone up. You go to 4 mics, you've lost another 3. You go to 8 mics, you've lost another 3. So if the whole band isn't playing this part of the song, no drums are being used. There's 8 drum mics on that drum set. Mute them until he plays again. The sax player is not playing right now. Mute him until he does what? When he's licking his lips, you know he's getting ready to play. That comes from paying attention to the stage. I hope your sax player is not playing every note of every song. That would be really annoying. Playing the melody line with the singer. Right? Shut up. Muting him, even if he is playing. Again, this PowerPoint, you can have it if you want it to review. Just email me and I'll give you a Dropbox link and you can download it. I have some books over there on mic technique, covered some of the same things I covered today. Let's do this too. Who was it in the last call? So if you put your, if you put your email, name, phone number, what you do at your church, your social security number, your master card number. Who else? Because I'm going to give away two microphones, and I'm going to give away a wireless guitar system. And I'll give you the cards in the last class. You have to be present during them. You have to be present to win, so don't leave yet.
You can ask questions, sure.
So you were saying, unlike Century Men, to put an Omni mic on that, right?
For pastor. Now, if you're a singer and worship man, I probably wouldn't use an Omni. I'd use some directional headphone mic.
Okay.
A cardioid or a microcardioid.
Okay.
What other questions do we have?
Yeah.
Do the low frequencies and high frequencies travel at the same speed?
Well, that's a good question. Wavelengths are different, so the wavelengths will hit you at different times. So if you have a regular speaker with a tweeter and a woofer, and they're not time aligned, like on a coaxial speaker, they'll get to you at different times. But the speed of sound is always typically the same, but wavelengths are different. So shorter high frequencies, longer bass frequencies. So, I don't know if that helps you, but...
When you have country lanes, like, I don't know, it seems like they don't come out as quickly. Do you know, like, by kind of beaten?
Could be what? Country lane, like, headlight?
Why what?
Like, why they would be, like, less quick than, like, a handle? Like, what?
Well, for one thing, a headworn, if it's an Omni headworn, is not going to have any props under the back. If it's a headworn cardioid, the closer I get it to his lips because it's a directional mic and not an omnidirectional, I could get maybe almost as much bass response out of that as I could a handheld. Handhelds also have larger diaphragms, so they kind of sound a little bit warmer. However, if you talk to some really expert recording engineers, they get as much bass response out of a small diaphragm condenser as a large diaphragm.
Are there any like practical tips to address that for like live, like a Sunday service?
For microphone applications? Oh, there's tons of sources. I would just go to Google. You can find out so much. I mean, you have to weed through the bad stuff. But if you're looking for reputable guys who you know that are experts and stuff, I can even give you some resources. To how to use a compressor. How to EQ vocals. How to EQ, how to mic a drum set. You can look up the Glenn Johns technique, too. There's about 1,800 different videos on there.
Yeah. Can you go over again what's the difference between the supercardioid and the hypercardioid?
Yeah. Hypercardioid and supercardioid are similar in that they both have two nulls, but they both have a lobe in the back. The difference is in the pickup range here. Where a cardioid is 130, a super might be 110, a hyper might be 105. So a 5 to 10 degree difference in the off-axis pickup.
Everybody got their card from them?
Have you used ribbon mics in live? You kind of mentioned it. Have you seen that been used, ribbon mics?
Oh, yeah. I'm starting to see them a lot more being used live. You just got, there are still some ribbons out there that are unidirectional. But if it's a bidirectional ribbon, there's a lot of companies that make these acoustic baffles. You can put them back in it.
Okay.
So you can put up the bass sound. Or if you have it off stage somewhere or in a closet, it doesn't make a difference.
Okay.
Some churches have their guitar cabinets removed. We've got a great guy here today, Paul Rivera, who's been at all the Rivera Guitars. And you want to talk about your ISO cabs a little bit?
Sure.
All right. Come on up. And he's got some other devices too. I think the Rock Crusher, the Power Soap kind of a thing. This is Paul Rivera, the legendary engineer designer.
It's an honor to be here, and it's an honor to listen to this guy talk. I just learned a whole bunch of things about microphones and mixers I never knew, which is cool. Well, we built an ISO cab, which is called the Silent Sister, and ISO cabs historically have had a problem where you have a sealed chamber with a speaker in a box, and you have a microphone that's actually inside that box, listening to the speaker in the sealed chamber. And so what's happening is that the speaker is pressurizing that chamber, and that microphone diaphragm is basically like a plunger in a toilet cleaner. And you can imagine the sound pressure on that diaphragm. So what we did was we solved some of the engineering problems, which is by pressure relieving this cabinet. So essentially the speaker now is in a, it's in a chamber, but there is a venting system that uses what's called a Helmholtz resonator. I don't know if you know much about it. You don't really have anything to draw with, do you? Anyway, so what it is that we created this 32-foot long tunnel so that it vents down at the bottom of the cabinet. And so by the time the sound actually gets to the bottom, it's been attenuated through all the sound absorbing material. And now the speaker is actually in free air. So for example, when you have a normal speaker cabinet for a guitar and you have a microphone on it, there's really no resistance around it to the speaker diaphragm itself or the speaker cone itself or to the microphone. And so what we found was there was a lot of touring bands that had ISO cabs where the guys were going nuts because they'd have to replace the microphones every month or every 2 months because basically the diaphragms would be blown out by this pressurized environment. So the other problem is standing waves. So what happens is because you have a perfectly rectangular box, the speaker and microphone, you get reflections on all these surfaces that interfere with the sound. So what we did is we came up with some wacky angles that kind of work. And so when you look inside the box, you know, there's an angle for this, angle for that, angle for that, and a lot of sound absorbing material. So we eliminated the standing wave issues, we eliminated the pressurization issues. It is a little tall, it's about it's like almost like a 4x12 in terms of its height, but it has a you know, a door that you can open the top. It has two microphone goosenecks on it. It has two jacks for speakers. You can daisy chain the speakers in it. They normally come with a Celestion G12T75, but you know, we can build them with special speakers. We've had a few people actually ask them for bass. We have a bass player from Tool. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that band. And so he has Silent Sisters with JBLs in them to handle it, because his wife was complaining that his girlfriend was too loud for the bass in his house, so he runs Silent Sisters. So we also produce a device which is called a rock pressure recording. And what this is a load box for a guitar amp. It is a power attenuator. You can run an external cabinet. And so the guitar player can crank up his rig and get all that great output stage distortion and still less, you know, and lower the volume actually going to the speaker. But one of the best parts about the rock pressure recording is it actually has a speaker emulator built in, so that you can actually get the sound of a Celestion or an Evidence or an EV or a JBL, whatever you want, going through the house mains. Now this is heaven, because you can put a pair of these by your mixing console. You can run the guitar amp output to these, and you can just sit back there and then have the guy totally silent on stage, but the sound going through the mains sounds like you've mic'd a 4x12 stack or whatever it is. And one of the best parts about all this is it's all analog, and it really preserves the sound of the amplifiers, and it doesn't have a lot of processing issues and so on. So thanks for the free time. If they go to Rivera.com, come to our website and take a peek. We also have a YouTube channel with 120, 130 videos. We just recently posted, we've got a Facebook page as well, Rivera Amplification. You know, a guitar player, which maybe some of you are familiar with, Slash, from Guns N' Roses and so on, he's now using rock pressures on the road. And we've got Geddy Lee from Rush. He's actually running this bass gear through the rock pressure recordings and then into the house of mains. So he loves it, because the cabinets there are just for appearance on stage.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, so we're going to give away a couple things. That's an incredible, huh? Danny Kim. The wireless guitar system. Well, $350 right there, guys. Anybody have any bids?
If I want to.
Karnak. Is it Yun An? How do you pronounce it? J-U-N? He was in the last spot, probably. Sorry. I think he won some last spot. Nathan Denny? Fit into these. They got a large, I got an extra large, I got a 2XL. So whoever wins, pick up the one you want, leave the rest for the other guy. Jared Yon, last class, sorry. Clay Savoy? Thank you. Jesse Wu.
Whoa!
Lars.
And Junior Prairie. Joshua Jim.
Yeah.
Examiners. Thanks, you guys. And stay in touch. My card's over there. There's more lit over there if you need to. And I'll hang out here for a few if you have any questions.
Thanks,
Coach.
Thank you.
There's some cable ties here if anybody wants any. Cable ties?
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
My name's Rich.
Hi, Rich.
I heard you at Watts a couple years in a row, and I think WFX, the year before that, and Long Beach. And I just want to say thank you for everything you're teaching and what you're doing. It helped change a lot of the sound at my church.
Really?
Yeah, it made a big difference in just integrating the sound and worship members.
I appreciate you saying that.
And I look back and just say thanks, because you guys made a big difference in the sound and worship better.
Well, thanks a lot, man.
So,
it's encouraging.
Yeah. So, thank you so much.
And one question. Okay, in my worship leader, I have to sing. The sister, the woman, has to take it up all the things. You know, the sister, he has so much time.
Okay.
You know,
too bright.
Yeah, too bright. Yeah. What can I do?
With the mixer?
Yeah, I don't know if I
would.
Well, a trick I like to do is put a bass and take it out of those highs.
What I like to do is I like to try to find the frequencies that are offensive. So if I was to show you on like this, get out of here for a minute. Quit this.
So for sister, we have to take it up the bass, right?
If it's too bright, you probably want to maybe not add bass, but maybe cut the highs a little bit.
Yeah.
You know. So let me just get over here so you can see what I'm doing. So here's the channel that I'm on. You see right here? I'm bringing the volume down, bringing it up. There we go. And I'm going to open the EQ up. What I'm going to try to do is here's what I'm going to do with the high pass filter. Right now it's off, so I get a lot of bass. So if you don't want all that bass, first thing to do is put the high pass HPF, if you have a high pass filter or a low cut filter. That will cut some of your bass like this. Checking 1, 2. If it's bright, you might want to shave off some of the high frequencies. If you look at here, I'm turning this on, and I'm going to cut the gain here. Let me just make this sure it's a shelf here. Shelf right there. So you can watch what I'm doing. I'm cutting the highs. Now, if that's too much, see, I'm going to cut everything off now. That's too much. You're welcome. But I'm going to cut off some of that brightness. Now, this is not a bright mic to begin with, so I don't know what kind of mic she's using either, or he's using. But if it's too bright, just cut off some of that top end, 10K and below. Another thing you can do is go into your mid-frequency. Let me shut this down a little bit so it's not so loud. Crank the gain up like that. So boost it. And then sweep and find out where the sound is that's most annoying. Check, 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 1, 2. Check, check. Right there sounds pretty bad, right? So now you're going to narrow that down a little bit and then pull it out so it sounds more natural. So you boost the gain, sweep, find out where in that sweep is the most offensive, and then pull it out. It's where you find the offending frequencies is to amplify them first and then remove them.
Okay?
Yeah. Right, yeah. Just eliminate a little bit so it doesn't sound so thick. Yeah. And you do that with a high pass filter. Because if that's off, it's going to sound like this. If I roll that up a little bit, look how much better that sounds by taking some of the lows out.
You've been listening to a seminar by Doug Gould entitled Microphone Applications, recorded at the Worship God West 2014 conference. For more information on Worship God conferences and Sovereign Grace Ministries, please visit our website at www.sovereigngraceministries.org.